Besides your GP, who else do you tend to take health advice from? Dr. Google is certainly doing the rounds. He's always on call. Yeah, and certainly we are more empowered as health consumers these days. We seek out and review the evidence for treatments. Many of us ask more robust questions of our GPs. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but the media is now also chock full of self-styled celebrity doctors and health gurus, and readers and viewers find them beguiling, it seems. And you might have heard about the controversy over American cardiothoracic surgeon Dr. Oz and his television show, which has come under scrutiny by the US Senate, and indeed his colleagues. Here's how John Oliver's show covered it.
The Senate hearing was about the marketing of dietary supplements, and unfortunately, no one is more effective at that than Dr. Oz.
Oz's advice is so influential that one mention of a product can cause sales to skyrocket. The phenomenon even has its own name, the Dr. Oz effect.
I want you to write it down, Garcinia Cambogia, because it may be the simple solution you've been looking for to bust your body fat for good.
Now I've got the number one miracle in a bottle to burn your fat.
Lightning in a bottle. It's a miracle flower to fight fat.
After Dr. Oz touted a substance called green coffee bean extract, one company in Florida sold 500,000 bottles.
The only problem with the Dr. Oz effect is that magic pills don't technically exist, and Dr. Oz knows that.
Do you believe that there's a miracle pill out there?
There's not a pill that's going to help you long-term lose weight and live the best life without diet and exercise.
Do you believe there's a magic weight loss cure out there?
If you're selling something because it's magical, no.
Dr. Oz, fronting up there, I think, to a US Senate committee. He hosts a TV show in the US, and we wanted to talk about celebrity doctors and whether they're a health risk. Joining us this morning, as she does regularly, is Dr. Ranjana Srivastava. She's a Melbourne-based medical oncologist and internal medicine physician. She's the author of, you might know, Tell Me the Truth, Conversations with Patients About Life and Death, and also Dying for a Chat, The Communication Breakdown Between Doctors and Patients. Welcome back to Life Matters, Ranjana.
Good morning, Natasha. How are you?
I'm good. Look, the irony isn't lost on us, of course. Here we are talking about medical advice from media celebrity doctors and health gurus, and you're a doctor and we're both in the media.
But not a celebrity doctor. Not in the vein of Dr. Oz, I hope.
Well, let's introduce people to Dr. Oz. I mean, TV is a popular source of health information, and it's an important one potentially because it reaches mass audiences. But my social media feeds have almost imploded over the news around Dr. Oz. Just illustrate who he is and how widespread his influence has been.
Well, I mean, I think Dr. Oz started off on the Oprah Winfrey Show as the doctor that she introduced to the audience, and from there on he established his own show. I'm not quite sure how many years he has now been going on for, but as you heard very nicely in the clips that you played, any endorsement by Dr. Oz leads to widespread sales of a product, widespread adoption of a practice, and I guess that's what, you know, we need to kind of scrutinize. It's not that the doctor is fronting the show, but what a doctor is saying on air or in the media, and how that's influencing public health.
So there was an interesting study done by the British Medical Journal late last year, and they investigated the accuracy of the claims made on both Dr. Oz's show and another popular medical TV talk show. What did they find?
Well, essentially, I mean, to summarise their findings, what they found was more than half of the advice that was provided or the recommendations were either they contradicted available medical evidence or the evidence was quite poor. As you might expect on a television show, the commonest recommendations were related to diet and to weight loss techniques, sort of immune boosting things, etc. And the authors pointed out that the magnitude of benefit was mentioned in less than 20% of cases. And also there was very little to negligible discussion about the potential for harm, the cost of care, recommending people to consult their doctor, and also a potential conflict of interest was very rarely declared in either show that was studied.
He's a cardiothoracic surgeon. He's vice chairman of Columbia University's surgery department. You have to wonder how a leading surgeon with a prestigious university position can step so far outside the evidence. What do you make of the seduction that's going on between celebrity doctors and their audiences?
Well, I mean, I think the seduction is there for us all to see. And as you heard, anything that is endorsed on these shows ends up winning large populations over. And I think that's because they often offer a simple fix. And it's really nice to hear that whether you are overweight or whether you are having problem with your hair, your skin, or, you know, you have cancer, that there is a quick and easy method with which to cap the problem.
Yes, indeed. And, of course, there's the great seduction of money, and he's probably making a mozza.
I wouldn't be in a position to say so, but I think that the temptation for any person in the media or doctors in the media, I mean, I imagine that there's a temptation to attract an audience because that's how you would keep a show alive on television, radio, or anything like that. You would know that better than me.
Mm. Ranjana, in relation to this British Medical Journal study that found that more than half of the recommendations on his show were not supported by evidence or actually contradicted the best available evidence, Dr. Oz has pushed back at his critics in the past week with a piece on time.com. It's a very interesting piece to read.
Yes.
So in response to that 50%, less than half of recommendations were not supported by evidence, he says, a similar figure is often used to approximate the amount of randomised clinical trial data underlying conversations in physicians' offices across America. This reflects that natural gap between what is proven in clinical trials and the needs of our patients.
Yes, so I read that opinion piece, and I think one would hope that a doctor who was practicing with a code of ethics would say to a patient that the treatment that was being suggested, whether it be for cancer or heart disease or whatever it was, had perhaps only a small amount of evidence or no evidence, but best clinical judgment behind it. The opinion piece that Dr. Oz has written starts off quite interestingly. It says that, you know, he started his TV show to advise audiences on how to find a good life, not to practice medicine on air.
Mm.
And I think that if that's what you're out to do, that's fine, but that's not what the audience thinks you're doing when you're any kind of a doctor with a media presence. And I think as long as you can try to differentiate that and say that you are heading some sort of an infotainment show or that, you know, people should not take it as gospel what they're hearing from a doctor, then it would be fine. But, you know, I think that's a really difficult thing to accomplish.
And I guess it comes with risks, but he also goes on to say last Thursday, my life's work has been built around one simple message. You have a right and a responsibility to become a world expert on your own body. I don't expect all my colleagues to understand this marriage between conventional medicine and the broader definition of wellness that the show pursues. When I interview an unusual or interesting person on my show, often it's expository or out of fascination, not to tell my audience they should see a psychic instead of their primary care physician. He walks such an interesting line because he's critiquing his own profession and its limitations.
I think that the limitations of the medical profession are there for all to see and discuss, and I often write about the gap between doctor-patient communication and the need to empower our patients. I think that many of us, if not most of us, believe that the best patient is the empowered patient, and you do need to make patients advocates for their own health. I think the question is, how do you do that?
Mm. Well, you're a medical oncologist, so you would be interested in overbloated claims about cancer cures and treatments. And there's been another case that has exploded into the headlines in the last week. Belle Gibson, a young Australian woman who built a whole brand and a book and a popular phone app around her claims that she'd cured her brain cancer through diet and whole foods. And what a complicated web she wove. She's obviously made a lot of money. She's now revealed her cancer diagnosis wasn't true. You had a very interesting encounter with her case.
Yeah, look, I think it's such an unfortunate story all around. And Annabel Crabb wrote a nice piece, actually, on the weekend about the fact that perhaps the fall from grace is Bell Gibson's sort of ultimate punishment for this. And you know, there's been a lot of criticism dumped on her, I guess. And it's all very unfortunate. But I think it was a sort of a sound message to doctors in the media, people like me, for example, as well, that we do need to be very careful about the people and the products that we associate ourselves with. So as I mentioned in the column I wrote in The Guardian, I was asked to interview Bell Gibson when she was at the height of her powers and her fame. I flicked through a copy of her book. I had never heard of her. And it just made me uneasy from the very beginning. The whole premise of the book made me uneasy. And I thought, no, I'm going to give this a good hearing before I decide what to do about it. But the more I read, the more I found the entire thing actually quite preposterous. And I ended up saying that I wouldn't conduct the interview because I felt uneasy about it. And in the back of my mind, I felt, you know, have I missed out on interviewing somebody who may have something to add? Oncology is so fraught, et cetera, et cetera. And so, of course, when all this came to light, I really felt as if I had dodged a bullet.
Yeah, but I gather, you know, the opportunity was presented to you because it would be a chance to bridge the holistic and the clinical, so to speak. That was the pitch.
That's correct, which is a very tempting pitch.
Isn't it?
For somebody who is trying to advocate a public health message, to so to say, we know that there are issues with conventional medicine, you know, the medical establishment sort of eschews all complementary therapies, etc., doesn't want to hear anything about it. Here is an opportunity to say, we can approach this with an open mind.
Mm.
And it all sounded quite good in theory, but this is what happened, and it really made me very cautious about doing these things in the future too.
Yeah. So what role do you think doctors have in the media? Because sometimes, you know, certainly I'm thinking of Charlie Teo as well, the well-known neurosurgeon. He's copped flak for having such a big presence in the media, but he's had a very effective presence in the media. But his colleagues have looked askance at him, and that can certainly happen, can't it, when doctors turn themselves into celebrities?
I think you do have to be very careful as a doctor, because I think you know, doctors still carry an enormous amount of respect and trust. And so you have to be careful not to abuse it. And your duty of care to patients remains first and foremost, whether you are in the clinic or in the media. And in that column I wrote, I said very much what I really do. And I said, well, there are two questions I ask myself when I speak in the media. One of them is, can I look my colleagues in the face when I go back to work?
Mm.
And the second one is, can I uphold my integrity with my patients? And if the answer to both of them is yes, then it feels safe to proceed. And so I think, you know, a code of ethics is really important, exciting as it is to engage with the media. And it's such a wonderful platform, such a useful platform to have in so many cases. You really have to tread with caution because people rely on what you say.
And I guess the question remains, can health ever be about entertainment?
I think there can be entertaining ways to present health. But you do have to be cautious about having boundaries around what you are going to say and what you are going to promote and to endorse.
And I'm just thinking of really good resources. There used to be Media Doctor Australia. There's Media Doctor Canada, Health News Review in the USA. These are effectively health news watchdogs. Perhaps we need the same for celebrity doctors.
Yeah, I think, you know, and one of the good things about the internet is, Natasha, that there are so many good sources, useful sources to go to where you can check and counter-check things that you hear about in the media. And I think that's wonderful, and it should keep us all in check.
Yep, keeps us on our toes. It's such an interesting dynamic, though, because clearly there is an audience demand here. Dr. Ranjana Srivastava, thank you so much for joining us again this morning on Life Matters.
Thank you.
And Ranjana is a medical oncologist, a general physician, a medical writer, author, and she joins us each month here on Life Matters to get a sense of what life is like on the other side of the doctor's desk.